Welcome to Enclave On Air. I'm your host today, Chris Ryan. Enclave On Air is a podcast from Enclave, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Enclave covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, sponsored by Deciphera Pharmaceuticals, we had the pleasure of speaking with Mark L. Gulnick, MD, regarding updates in the treatment of patients with gastrointestinal stromal tumor. Dr. L. Gulnick is a professor of clinical medicine, vice chair for faculty development in the Department of Medicine, and section chief of sarcomas and melanoma at the Keck School of Medicine at the University of Southern California in Los Angeles. In our exclusive interview, Dr. L. Gulnick spotlighted key updates from across the GIST landscape ahead of GIST Awareness Day on July 13th. Including how the heterogeneity of this disease can drive individual treatment decision-making, how the integration of ripretinib has affected the treatment paradigm and ongoing research with the agent, and how other ongoing research within the GIST realm could further drive the evolution of the management of this malignancy. Okay, Dr. Gulnick, thank you again for joining me to speak a little bit about some of the recent updates and current practice trends within the GIST treatment landscape. So I guess to start, could you elaborate a little bit about the heterogeneity of GIST within this disease and how that could potentially affect treatment decisions within this space, just given the complex and different mutations that could occur within these patients?
Yeah, we've come a long way over the last decade with the understanding of patients with GIST, which has substantially helped the management and treatment for these patients. And so I think where we were about 10 years ago and where we are today, it really is a different disease understanding process. And what I mean specifically is that we do understand the drivers that are driving the disease, and we could classify each patient's individual mutations as part of the disease process. So whereby at one point we perhaps would say that a patient had a GIST of the small bowel or of the stomach, I think now we'd be better off saying the patient has an exon 9 mutated GIST of the small bowel or stomach, and the same thing for exon 11 mutations in KIT or PDGFR-alpha. And then whereby at one point we used to call some of the disease wild-type GIST, I think we have a better understanding now, and we could specifically call it an SDH-deficient GIST. We could call it based on whether or not it has an NF1 mutation or an NTRK fusion, or if we're able to isolate any driver mutations that is specifically driving the disease process.
When you are presented with a patient with GIST, when do you recommend testing for genetic abnormalities, whether that be at diagnosis and then potential retesting, and just what method is kind of best for identifying those alterations within these patients?
Yeah, so I think most GIST specialists throughout the United States would say that a patient with a GIST needs to understand what is the driver mutation that's leading to the formation of their disease and perhaps puts them at increased risk or decreased risk of recurrence or progression of their disease, depending on if they've had a resected tumor or if they have metastatic disease. And so for my personal practice, any patient who walks in the clinic will have genetic sequencing done of their tumor. If genetic sequencing of the tumor is not possible, then I will assess circulating tumor DNA in blood to see whether or not I'm able to pick up what the mutations are that perhaps is driving their disease process.
Diving into some of the treatments and data that have come out in recent years. First, looking at ripretinib in the Invictus trial, it demonstrated a survival benefit over placebo in a heavily pretreated, I believe it was the fourth line or later patient population. But then if you look at the INTRIGUE trial, it didn't show a benefit in the ITT population over second line sunitinib. So just given all these data in different settings for ripretinib thus far, just how do you kind of see this agent continuing to fit into the treatment paradigm for this patient population?
I think we were very fortunate in the sarcoma community and those of us who treat GIST that several years ago, back in about 2020, we had the emergence of several new drugs to market. And I think if we want to talk about ripretinib in particular, we see that it was evaluated in a very similar way that sunitinib was evaluated and regorafenib was evaluated in their second and third line trials, where it was done against placebo. And so I think if we look at the fourth or fifth line therapies for patients who had had prior therapies and needed a new therapy, it was reasonable to test it versus placebo because at the time of the Invictus trial, there was no other established FDA-approved fourth line or fifth line therapy. And what we clearly see from the data that has since been published is that ripretinib is an effective therapy in the fourth line setting. It is superior than doing nothing, which we all knew or anticipated would come about, which was similar to what we saw with sunitinib and regorafenib. And then we're able to understand a safety profile for the drug that looks similar, maybe a little few nuances and a few differences compared to the other tyrosine kinase inhibitor. But it really established a place in the treatment of patients with GIST and metastatic GIST, and it gave itself an FDA indication for a fourth line therapy. And it is also an interesting therapy to consider doubling the dose. And there is several papers that have since been published that shows that at a standard dose, you do get a benefit. And then if you start to lose the benefit, you could double the dose and patients will still get benefits from that. And that recommendation has since been incorporated into NCCN guidelines. If we move forward and we specifically are now looking at a second line trial, and the second line trial that we're talking about is the INTRIGUE trial, that was an evaluation of patients who have previously been on imatinib or were intolerant to imatinib and were due to receive sunitinib, and they were randomized to receiving sunitinib or ripretinib as a second line therapy. Where this study did not succeed in establishing, and that was the success of ripretinib as superior to sunitinib, what we do see from the subset analysis is that it is potentially slightly better for those with an exon 11 mutation, and then is also slightly worse for those with an exon 9 mutation. We've known for some time that sunitinib is a wonderful drug for patients who have an exon 9 mutation, and this study confirmed that. If you isolated it to a patient population that only had exon 11 or lacked an exon 9 mutation, perhaps we would have seen an increased benefit to ripretinib, but it certainly is a very successful drug for a second line therapy. It is not superior to what was already on the market, and therefore we don't have an FDA indication for it as a second line therapy, but it is included in NCCN guidelines, and I think this is where we should pay very close attention, that for patients who are intolerant or cannot be treated with sunitinib, as a second line therapy, ripretinib would be recommended based on the NCCN guidelines.
There is a certain proportion of patients who are going to be resistant to imatinib just right off the bat. So when you do encounter patients who have resistance to this drug or potentially even others in later lines of therapy, just how do you kind of approach treatment and, you know, altering a plan just based on those resistances that are seen?
All patients will form resistance to all the drugs that we have on the market. And that's why we do clinical trials. And there are a number of clinical trials that are looking at patients who have had no treatments, prior treatments, one prior treatment, two prior treatment, or subsequent treatments. And these keep getting presented at our national meetings. And over time, they'll be evaluated as a phase one to establish the dose and toxicity profile. And then subsequently as phase two to establish whether or not there's activity. And then phase three, they would compare it to what would be considered standard of care, with the aims of getting it to market to be able to serve all patients. When we talk about resistance, we talk about a primary resistance and a secondary resistance. And the way I see it is that a primary resistance is when the patient will derive no benefit from the drug right from the beginning. A secondary resistance is when they'll derive benefit from the drug initially, but over time they lose the benefit. And that is because the tumor starts to become smarter than the drugs that we have to treat it, and whereby a patient will start off as an exon 11 mutated GIST, let's say of the stomach, and they'll start on imatinib, and let's say 2 years later, they start to show growth of their tumor. If you retest a new tumor site, or if you retest circulating tumor DNA, you may pick up a secondary mutation that could now be an exon 13, 14, 17, 18, and therefore you need to start to look at a drug that will target those in particular. And what's really impressive over time in the studies that are currently ongoing is that they are specifically looking at some of these secondary mutations and therefore trying to target it with new drugs or new combinations that will best help these patients. We know that in first line and the use of imatinib currently is the longest amount of time that a patient should be on it before their disease progresses. Unfortunately, with sunitinib and regorafenib, the time on the drug for the average patient is quite limited and substantially smaller than what we saw with imatinib. Ripretinib is able to improve upon that, That's certainly a combination, or choosing the right drug at the right time for the right target is ultimately where we need to be. And I do feel very confident that's where we're going to end up being.
As researchers continue to show the genetic differences in different subgroups within the GIST population, just how do you, you know, anticipate the treatment landscape continuing to evolve?
So I think currently the standard of care would be to understand the patient's mutations at time of diagnosis or time of establishment of metastatic disease. I'm confident that that's not where we're going to be again in a year from now or 2 years from now. And I'm pretty certain that my colleagues that are treating a high volume of GIST patients are repeating these tests at different time periods, as am I currently. And so if you were walking into my office for the first time, you had metastatic disease, I would establish what the genetic abnormality is that's driving the tumor. Once the disease progresses, I then want to understand the signature of that disease that has progressed. And therefore, at the time of progression, I may recommend another biopsy to be able to better understand the process, or I may recommend ctDNA in the blood, which is a blood test that can be done to see whether or not we could capture a new mutation. And then we would initiate a new therapy. And once again, when that therapy fails to continue to work, then again, I would recommend getting more tissue or more blood in order to understand what is the next mutation that has established. And so I think over time, the signature of the tumor needs to be understood. And as we continue to progress on different therapies, it is worthwhile to better understand the tumor so that we're making sure that we're choosing drugs that are specifically targeting the abnormalities that are now detected, and that we're not targeting the abnormalities that we saw on the first tissue, because over time, that disease is no longer the same. And so the disease that we find in 2021 and start treatment is not the disease that we're treating in 2024. And the individual profile changes for the patient. And therefore, we have to understand what the disease is currently for us to treat it. And if we don't keep checking for the mutations that we have on the tumors, I think then the therapies that we're going to do are going to become outdated. And therefore, we have to have an evolution on how we see the patient and how we understand the patient's disease over time.
Within the GIST space right now, are there any ongoing studies that you're particularly excited to see continue and read out eventually?
Yeah, so I think that there are several studies that are currently ongoing. There is the PEAK trial that is a phase 3 clinical trial looking at a combination therapy versus single agent sunitinib for patients who have progressed on imatinib. I know that there's exciting work being done by Deciphera and their drug ripretinib, which we've already talked today. And they're trying to find whether or not there's a role for this drug for patients who have specific mutations after they've failed therapy with imatinib. There was some interesting work presented at ASCO this year, and that is looking at some phase 1 work with some new novel tyrosine kinase inhibitor that perhaps target different and multiple targets that will be better for patients. And then I think also we can't neglect to understand that there are very rare patients who have these subset of mutations that aren't the KIT and aren't PDGFR alpha. And I think where we've done some great advances over the years and once again got presented at ASCO this year is work being done on SDH deficient GIST patients. And so there are a number of studies in the United States that are ongoing who have just completed, will read out, and potentially we will have new therapies for these patients that may ultimately be different targets, like some work we've done last year with FGFR inhibitors.
Just based on all the updates recently and the things ongoing in clinical research, what would kind of be your main take-home message for colleagues regarding the current state of the GIST landscape and where it's heading in the future?
Yeah, so I think currently we are much better positioned than we have in the last several years. I think there are a number of studies that are ongoing, and my recommendation always would be to see whether or not there is a clinical trial in the area of where you live in so that patients can be diverted to those trials. The benefit of that then is that the entire community gets access to drugs once they come to market. I also think that we need to make sure that we're understanding the exact genetic signature of the patient at different time periods. And it would be to the patient's advantage to have tissue or blood tested at multiple time periods in order to probably get a better understanding of what the diseases that we're working for. I think one needs to remain very hopeful and encouraged. I think that the 4 drugs that we currently have on the market for KIT mutations and the 1 drug we currently have for PDGFR alpha mutation I think they are very effective. I think they're giving patients a very nice longevity, but obviously we need to continue to make advances. And I think that this is the time that we do have a lot of trials throughout the United States and globally that will be able to give us more information and ultimately expand it from 5 drugs to many more drugs.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air, sponsored by Deciphera Pharmaceuticals. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates on oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.